Hello? There we go. Okay, we're going to call the meeting to order. The meeting of the Planning Committee is now in session. A quorum. What's the first item on the agenda?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Item 5 is an action item on the I-710 South and or Early Action Projects Measure R Highway Program that was designated $590 million for these two categories. I have with me Frank Kwan and Lucy Olmos, who have been working on this project. We're creating funding categories within the Early Action and the Freeway piece. We've met with the COG. We have a consensus amongst them to use these funding targets and allocations in order to move this program forward. We're asking for board approval.
Is there any, do anybody wants to be heard on this? Okay, is there any discussion on this item?
No, I'll move it.
Moved by O'Connor, seconded by Katz, without objection, unanimous vote. Next item.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Next item is I-605 corridor hotspot interchanges, again in Gateway Cities. Again, I have Lucy Olmos and Frank Kwan with me. Very similar in the amount of money that was allocated. We've similarly sat down with the COG and a chief consensus on funding targets and an allocation within the budget of the long-range plan for each of these categories, and we'd ask board permission to move ahead and begin signing agreements to move the projects forward.
Any discussion? Anybody in the public who wants to be heard? Seeing none, it's moved by O'Connor, seconded by Antonovich, without objection. Unanimous vote. Next item.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Item 7 is a funding agreement. It's an extension for a lapse date where we have a project in the High Desert Corridor with the High Desert Corridor Joint Powers Authority. We have an agreement with them for the exchange of funds and work to be done, and we'd like to be able to extend that agreement and keep that project moving.
Okay. Who's it up to extend it? Is it our extension?
It's up to both extension? Of us, yeah. Well, both parties need to agree. So this is authorizing you to.
Who's the other party?
The other party is the High Desert Corridor, JPA, which
okay, is. I got it. Okay. All right. Any discussion? Anybody in the public want to be heard on this? Seeing none. Antonovich moves. Katz seconds without objection. Unanimous vote. Next item is item 8.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Don Sepulveda, Executive Officer, Regional Rail Metro. What you have before you in item number 8 are two different matters, and at the same time, I want to add that we can exclude or include item 15 on the agenda as well with this. The regional rails include this as part of this report.
Okay, we'll do that.
What you have before you is a request to release an RFQ for a grade separation project at Doran Street, and the second item is recommend that the Southern California Regional Rail Authority pursue a fare increase of 9% for the upcoming fiscal year. Doran Street, the board actually passed a motion back in May of 2011 to allocate $6.6 million to improve the Doran Street intersection. This crossing has been subject of a lot of issues with the PUC and the local agencies, and we've been working with them to try and pursue a solution to this, including working through mediation. This grade separation, of course, will eliminate the safety hazards, and funding for this initial grade separation will be through that previous, or funding for the engineering will be through that previous board action. And I will move on to the budget, if I could. The Metrolink is anticipating a $14 million, which is an 8% increase in operating budget for fiscal year 2012-13. With no fare increase, this net impact to the member agency is about 16% in operating subsidy. Table there that talks about where the overall changes are, and this actually equates to a 20% change for LAMTA's subsidy. These are some of the cost breakdowns. We have fuel as a $4.7 million increase, Amtrak salaries, vehicle maintenance, transfer payments to operators, and post-employment benefits. These are the major sources of increase. The fare increase history, as you can see on this chart, has been 4.5 to 5% averaging in recent years, with the last increase in fiscal year 2011. We've included a chart here as to what the base subsidy, what happens to our base subsidy with a fare increase, and you can see that there's an average increase for the fiscal year for us as in Metro with the various averages. There's a 0, 5, all the way up to 9%, and the 9% increase is an increase of 4.5 in our subsidy over the current year. And we're still working with Rail to Rail on that. I'm not sure. I have to apologize. I'm not sure how that slide slipped in there other than my error. So we're still working with Rail to Rail on this, so I want to get past that. So the conclusion is that we do fund Metrolink with Prop C. We do with the increase in operating and rehab subsidies, the PC-10s and currently funded are inadequate, so we're moving to other methods of funding this. But this fare increase is needed to meet that increase, those increased operating and rehab costs. And again, the recommendations are to release the RFP, RFQ for Doran Street and to move for that 9% fare increase for Metrolink.
Thank you. Any discussion? Anybody in the public who wants to be heard on this item? Seeing none, is there a motion? It's moved by Katz, seconded by O'Connor. Without objection, unanimous vote. Can I just ask you one question before you leave? When was the last time there was a fare increase?
It was 2011, and it was 6%.
So 9% after two, well, it's a year ago. 9% in one year?
It was fiscal year 2011, and it's essentially been 2 years since there's been a fare increase is the way the calendar works out on this.
Isn't 9% a little steep?
If I could, Don?
Yes, sir.
Metrolink has presented several options to the boards. I mean, there's a $13 million gap, I think it is at this point, that we're trying to close. And among the options that were presented to the board members to take back to their boards were increased contributions from the member agencies or a fare increase in addition to what we've already cut out of Metrolink. And last year, we didn't do the fare increase because the CEO, John Fenton, had brought the budget in 10% under budget. We saved $17 million after all of our additional expenses, so we didn't raise fares then. Bad news about that is we're partially making up for it now, and that's part of this, but the goal is to close that 9%. And I'm sorry, that $13 million. And so that's what it'll be, some combination. Nine is a lot, I agree with you. But it'll be some combination. It'll be no more than nine and somewhere in the five to up to 9%. We're trying to balance it between what the agencies will put.
So what's driving the costs up in the agency over there?
In Metrolink?
Yeah.
It's a number. Part of it's just the cost of business. Part of it's a new contract for the Amtrak negotiated a national labor relations deal with the engineers, with the BLET, the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers, and there was an increase in that, so we have to pick up that. That's just a pass-through to us directly, and that's part of it. And, Don, I don't remember how much that was, if you
do. 8.3.
That was 8.3. The member agency so far, I mean, this will be a discussion point at our board meeting, the Metrolink board meeting next week, is going to be how high to go, how much the member agencies are going to make up themselves, and what that mix is. So by the time we get together again, we should have an answer for you on that. We have a hearing on the May 30th?
May 30th.
On the fare increase, much like the one, you know, the ones we have to do here.
Yes, Mr. Ali.
On a monthly basis, I meet with my counterparts from the Skag region, and I would just say the other counties, at least Ventura, Riverside, San Bernardino, and Orange, at least their CEOs are saying that they can't afford increased subsidies of Metrolink. Now, maybe the boards will agree with them, maybe they won't, but that will be the context in which, at least in which this will be, should be seen.
Okay. Thank you. All right. That was approved unanimously. Item 9.
Oops, I'm sorry. It's all. It's on there. You have to hit exit, I think, first. Or escape.
Go ahead. Oh, you still setting up?
Okay. Yeah, sorry. Good morning. What we're asking here is authorization to amend our list of public-private partnership program
tasks, to include a new one, in the course of our review of a number of our P3 programs, they were brought to us an idea to bundle a number of projects and utilize the P3 concept to accelerate the actual construction and contracting for these. And what we have here, P3 being really a delivery system, allows us to leverage or measure our funding and attract private investment to reduce the costs and to deliver a project today, starting today, that otherwise would not be finished till 2030. Through the P3 program, we believe that these projects can be finished by 2017, as we'll show a little bit further here. Just a quick reminder, we have InfraConsult with a number of sub-consultants, including KPMG, working on these projects. Next one, please, Doug. What we have here is a packaging, which the objective of which is to accelerate the delivery of all these projects and to make them get them in a little cheaper. It's a total package of about $768 million in cost. And I'll let Doug talk a little bit about what the projects are individually.
Yeah, there are really six projects buried within this. The bundle starts on the east side of the county over in Pomona on the SR-71. We have a four-lane expressway basically between Route 10 and Route 60, actually at Rio Rancho. So we're proposing, that's two projects. We're working with Pomona to bring that in to a six-lane freeway type of mode. We have Soundwall Packages 10 in Arcadia and Pasadena, and then Soundwall Package 11 in the San Fernando Valley on Route 170 and Route 405. And then I-5 North and HOV Lane has been proposed and cleared environmentally between 514 and Parker Road. These are all primarily bond-funded projects, either Prop C or Measure R. But we're also adding a proposed scheduled pavement rehab by the state, which is SHOP funding to the I-5 project.
Okay, the next one. Yep. Yeah, there is some individual showing of what the projects are. If we hit the next one. What I wanted to emphasize, I guess, are two or three things. Number one, these are all projects that are already environmentally cleared or are very close to being cleared. There's no detriment to the funding of any other projects. This is within the LRTP, so there's no movement or effect on other projects. These are funded projects that have a designated source of funding, albeit much of the funding in later years. If we hit the next one. We looked at a lot of different options in trying to do this, and it turns out that in our analysis, the most effective option that provides the best value would be a 30-year availability payment concession. If you hit the next one, Doug, please. And here, this is maybe the most important slide because it shows what would happen under the currently programmed delivery. And as you can see, we run all the way out to 2030. Using the accelerated delivery under P3, we can deliver all these projects by 2017. The savings are in a number of ways. We have enhanced competition because we have all the projects bundled. We have a risk transfer because our program would transfer the risk of on-time delivery and certainty of cost to the private sector who would put up the money. This enables us to leverage the Measure R and other funds to pay them at a later date on an availability basis when the projects are available. This also gives us a schedule that is very manageable and also one in which we can report to the board at various times to show you progress and give you the opportunity to weigh in on these projects as we go. Hit one more if you would, Doug, please. And this is pretty much what I was talking about. We're shifting the risk. We're getting project capital through equity investment by the concessionaire. CalPERS is very interested, third-party funding. Give us ongoing control over design and construction and operations and maintenance, which is part of the program as well, which hasn't been heretofore the case. And the projects will be available for public use many years ahead of the current schedule. This also allows a very big construction program to begin immediately, which generates jobs and those kinds of things. So the next steps, which are generic to all the P3 programs when we get to them, would be to meet with Caltrans on the highway side because they'll be our partners in the final design work and contracting work, meeting with the CTC to initiate the discussions to have them approve it as a P3, and beginning our outreach to the industry, as well as meeting with the FHA, and finalizing the scope of budget for the project. If we have any questions, I'd be pleased to.
All right, are there any questions? Anybody in the audience who wants to be heard on this item? Seeing none, is there a motion to approve item 9? It's moved by Katz, seconded by Antonovich. Without objection, unanimous vote. Next item. Should not? Okay, then why don't you bring it to their attention?
Item 9 is not consent.
Item 10, are you ready?
Yes, we're ready on item 10.
Item 10 is an agreement with the California Highway Patrol. This is an agreement that we execute annually in order to provide support services to MTA for the Freeway Service Patrol. In essence, the agreement this time is for the same amount of money as we had last year, with the exception that we're adding additional service for as the express lanes come online. So we've added money to cover anticipated additional expenses for monitoring the express lanes project and their support on that. So other than that, I have with me Ken Coleman and John Takahashi if there are any questions.
Any questions? Not, is there a motion to approve?
Second.
Without objection, unanimous vote.
This is probably one of the most cost-effective, best things we do around here is this program. This is the one that doesn't wait for somebody to show up to take, you know, it's got pre-positioned tow truck. I mean, the savings to motorists, this pays itself back, you know, to our constituents several fold.
Okay. Next item, 11.
Yes, item 11 is a receive and file item, and we wish to make the board, the committee and the board aware that the I-710 South environmental document, we've been working through the process with Caltrans, great partnership with our partners in the Gateway Cities and the two ports. That draft environmental document is nearing ready for circulation, so we wish to make you aware in advance that it will be circulated soon by Caltrans. Through their processes, and that we anticipate that there will be questions. We'll obviously be holding a number of meetings, including public hearings on the project. We are scheduled to have a final environmental document on that project next spring. So we wish to make you aware that we've made great progress on that project, and we look forward to moving it forward through the rest of the process. I have with me Adrian Alvarez and Frank Kwan if there are any questions.
Any questions? Any discussion? Not. Is there a motion to receive and file? O'Connor moves. Katz seconds. Without objection, unanimous vote to receive and file. Item 13.
Good afternoon. At last month's Planning and Programming Committee, you approved the name change of the Metro Green Line to LAX to the Airport Metro Connector and received the alternatives that we were moving forward into the environmental process. At that time, the committee requested a report back this month comparing personal rapid transit to the other modes moving forward in the draft EIR EIS. I have with me today Corey Zellmer, our project manager, and Roderick Diaz. We have a short presentation if the committee so desires. Go ahead.
You have a report?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Just to start out with, just to describe personal rapid transit quickly, the service is basically a direct point-to-point service where there are no intermediate station stops. The service also uses smaller vehicles, generally 4 to 6 seated passengers, but can be up to 8 passengers. And with this type of system, it requires more stations in order to disperse and allow for the point-to-point service. Currently, there are only 3 operating PRT systems in the world. The first one's in Morgantown, West Virginia. It serves a campus as well as connecting to the downtown. The second is a small system in Masdar City, which is Abu Dhabi, also a 1-mile system with only 2 stations. And the third is in London. It's at the Heathrow Airport. This is a system actually that connects a single parking lot to a terminal at Heathrow Airport. In terms of comparison, our focus was mostly on capacity initially when we started the study. One of the questions we had was, can a system such as PRT accommodate the potential travel demand associated with the Airport Metro Connector project? Here, this graphic shows the three initial modes that we considered, which were light rail transit, automated people mover systems, and bus rapid transit. And at the bottom, we do include now the personal rapid transit and its capacity comparison to the other three. We also show operating speed for the system, generally the typical markets that these types of systems would serve. Again, our typical transit modes would serve a more concentrated, fewer station-type service, whereas the personal rapid transit needs to be dispersed in order to serve the direct door-to-door service. Initially, when we started the study, we did reach out to several of the PRT resources to gather information on the viability of PRT. Unfortunately, a lot of that information is still proprietary to a lot of the firms that develop PRT systems. So early in the process, we were unable to properly obtain the data we needed to evaluate PRT at the same level as some of the other modes we're currently studying as part of the project. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions related to the presentation.
Do we have anybody who wishes to be heard on this? Okay. Can you make this report available to Mr. Taft, who brought this to our attention?
I will. Place? I will, yes.
And Councilman Koretz?
Yes.
Came with him. Any discussion? All right, thank you for the report.
Okay.
Actually helpful. Without objection, receive and file item number 12. Item 13?
Yes, item number 13 is a receive and file on the East San Fernando Valley North-South Rapidways. This is a Measure R project. There are four corridors involved in the East San Fernando Valley, Reseda, Sepulveda, Lancashire, and Van Nuys. Back in 2010, the City of L.A. did a study of the four corridors and came up with recommended improvements for the short, medium, and long term. For Sepulveda, Lancashire, and Reseda, they were minor capital improvements. For Van Nuys, it was a major capital improvement, so we divided the environmental process up for the four corridors. I have Walt Davis, our project manager, and Jesus Serrano with the City of L.A., and we have a short presentation for you.
As Rene mentioned, the two projects were separated. The Van Nuys project requires a full-blown EIR, EIS, whereas the other three projects, Reseda, Sepulveda, and Lancashire, only required categorical exemption or a mitigated neg deck. And since it was less of an effort, we divided the two projects. For the three-quarter projects, the City of L.A. recommended on page 6 of your packet signal timing changes, roadway striping, and a number of other improvements. In addition to the improvements the City of L.A. recommended, we asked our consultant to look at other possibilities for improving transit on Reseda, Sepulveda, and Lancashire, and the additional measures that were considered are on the right page of that slide, queue jumpers, bus stop consolidation, raised medians. What our consultant found is that buses move quite good on Reseda, Sepulveda, and Lancashire, and that the average trip length on those three corridors is less than 3 miles, and that most of these signalized intersections are at an A or B because the City of L.A. has already optimized the signals. Therefore, the final conclusions of the study is that if we implemented these improvements, the benefit that would be realized by the bus rider would be minimal. So the final conclusion was that no improvements were recommended using the Measure R funds, and that we focused the funds on the larger project where we realized higher bus ridership and a greater, more significant transportation investment could be made, and that's on Van Nuys Boulevard or Sepulveda Boulevard. For Van Nuys Boulevard, we have expanded the study area. On page 8, we have the expanded study area. Van Nuys Boulevard is where we realized the highest ridership for north-south corridor in the San Fernando Valley, and for the San Fernando Valley, it's second only to the Metro Orange Line, about 1,000 boardings less than the Metro Orange Line, and the seventh largest in the metro system. The Sepulveda corridor, which we added in our expanded study area in response to community comments, adds possible synergy because you could possibly connect the two. With the expanded study area, we've also added a new terminus destination point to the project, and that is the Sylmar San Fernando Metrolink station. We held community meetings for the Sepulveda Quarter in April and May of this year. For those, we had approximately 140 people attend and 250 comments. Some of the comments we received for the quarter are there was a preference for Sepulveda for a project on Van Nuys Boulevard. We received a lot of comments desiring to see light rail and an equal number of comments wanting to see bus systems improvements. And then we received a number of comments, people who do not want us to see us to disturb what's on Brand Boulevard where they have good transportation enhancements. We are still receiving public comment, and we hope to get them in by all our comments in by May 18th, which will enable us to move to the screening process of our identified alternatives into the Tier 1 evaluation process. The next steps, we'll continue to work on the alternatives analysis. We're screening alternatives right now, and in the late summer of this year, we hope to return to the community with the findings from our screening process and return to the board in the fall or winter of this year. And the public participation process will be ongoing. That concludes my presentation. If there's any questions.
Mr. Antonovich.
Yeah, could you explain how it's going to connect with the Santa Clarita Valley?
Well, we think that if we can tie it with the Sylmar San Fernando Metrolink station, you have the Metrolink right there coming from San Fernando and Antelope Valley. So it's a nice linkage to enable people to get off at the Metrolink station and enjoy the benefits of the service.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thanks for the report. Without objection, we'll receive and file item 13. Do we have any other items? We've already taken care of 15, right?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Item 14 is the monthly update on status of the highway projects. We'll pull up the PowerPoint here and get me set up.
Hang on a second. Excuse me. Let me have the mouse. And I don't know if that's the one or not. Oh. Where is it? Davis PowerPoint.
In front of you, you have copies of a PowerPoint. I'll just take them through them. Can't find it on the screen. At construction, you've gotten used to seeing an update monthly on the transit projects. We're running similar programs through the on the highway projects as well, using Brian Boudreau's shop. I have with me Rich Mora. The first sheet is a chart similar to what you're used to seeing on the transit projects that shows the current status of most of the variety of highway projects. From I-514 at the beginning of it, which is under construction, down through I-5 North capacity enhancements, which after the board acts will actually bring that project much further forward. And then down below that, the second page, page three of your slide takes you all the way through the highway desert environmental. What's more important probably for you is we'll call your attention to the beginning on page four, which is the individual sheets for each individual project, where you get an idea of how we're tracking each project based on budget and schedule, tracking individual risks, identifying of the funding types for the various projects, and where they are at in the various processes. The types of risks that we track on the budget side are funding commitments versus funding where we have dates and times on it, such as the current CMIA funding, so those projects show a risk until allocated. And then on schedule, where we're tracking things that are available, we give you the current and the forecast dates on those projects. I think the one I would like to call to your attention as an example would be, let's go to what would be page 9 of the report. where we show the I-5 South capacity enhancements from I-5 to the Orange County line. We've included all the five segments in Carmenita Road. We've made great progress on those projects, but we're continuing to track them. We have allocations now on Carmenita Road, Segment 1, Segments 3 and 4. We're working hard with Caltrans to make sure Segment 5 gets delivered. We're actually, that one's several months ahead of schedule. We anticipate an allocation by December of this year. And then the last one is Segment 2, which is Adelandra. And that project is scheduled before the end, about a year from now, actually, is when it's scheduled for its allocation. That's an example of the types of projects that we're tracking. Or if you flip to the next page, on page 10, you'll see the SR-138 capacity enhancements. Rather than one project, it's actually a series of different segments, a number of which have already been completed. We've been working on some time, and we're continuing to deliver the rest of those. So biggest risk we face on most of our projects in the highway program right now is right-of-way resources. Caltrans has been pushed thin on the delivery of I-5, but they're starting to recover from that. We have been supplementing them with resources from Metro to help them make sure that they meet their delivery commitments. And with that, we'll ask if there's any questions on individual projects.
Mr. Katz?
Is this contingent at all on the bond sale?
There's a base assumption in here that the bond sales will continue, particularly for our CMIA funded projects. Once the CTC does allocate, it reduced the risks on us tremendously. So we have really two projects left that we're tracking very closely based upon that. One is I-5 North Burbank Empire. That project is scheduled to allocate in June. Pardon?
HOV lane?
That's the HOV lane, correct. But it also really redoes Burbank Boulevard and reconfigures the entrance into the airport. That's the last one with CMIA funding. There is state and local partnership on I-5 South. It's the Segment 5 piece. We have to allocate that by June of next year to meet statutory commitments. So that's the biggest risk at this point in time. We see no problem with allocations through June. And we'll continue to track what bond sales mean in the fall for that allocation in December.
Thanks, yep. Doug.
Okay. Well, no one else wanted to be heard. Whoever the public wanted to be heard. Without objection, the sign will be received and filed. Have the director's report, executive director's report, CEO's report. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Yaroslavsky. Last week, the House and Senate met for the first meeting of the conference committee debating the service transportation bill. I'm pleased to note that Senator Boxer was named chair of the conference, a very good sign for California and for, of course, America Fast Forward. We are awaiting word from the U.S. STA on several grants, including some Tiger grants we are pursuing. Stay tuned for that. The transportation bill is moving very slowly, so we have to continue to monitor. I want to note that we've started meetings with the COGS, the various COGS, on the potential discussion on a Measure R extension. Met yesterday with the South Bay COG, a very positive meeting. Met this morning with Nick Conway of San Gabriel, very positive discussion. Those will continue in the coming weeks. Pardon me.
Better than last time?
Very warm and cordial discussions. I'm serious. Very positive. I want to introduce Lorene Kelly. Could you just wave or something, stand up, whatever? She is the Division 2 Transportation Manager. She'll be working here at headquarters for a few months to see how this part of the world operates. And this is part of our ongoing effort to prepare for the next generation of managers at MTA. With that, I'll conclude. Thank you.
Okay. We have one person who wants to be heard on public comment. Mr. Walsh.
John Walsh, blogging at HollywoodHighlands.org. Yesterday, 2,700 successful server requests, a slow day. And also the great-grandson of Leo Berger, Hungarian Jew from New York City. I must say that I'd have to agree with MTA that There's no point in the bus riders union going and attacking Obama and attacking Mr. Rugoff, a Jew. The bus riders attacking a Jew as the scapegoat.
That's,
when the reason I'm talking about the vote.
Mr. Walsh,
as,
just keep religion and ethnicity out of it.
Okay, then don't tunnel under Beverly
Hills.
Okay. First of all, that's not under the First Amendment. That's not under.
Oh, then sue me. Then sue me.
If you do it one more time,
you're out of here. You can go sue me. Okay? And sue the agency. Thank you.
I wanted to hear. Sue me.
We're done.
No, that's not public. General public comment.
You want to speak on general public comment?
Yeah.
Come on up.
I'd like to invite you all with a special invitation to Mr. Katz and Mr. Yaroslavsky tomorrow when the media is here. And when the media is here, I get treated well when there are cameras here and there are no reporters here. Okay? And tomorrow, thousands and thousands of Jews will come here and we'll see whether anybody will say keep religion out of it. Tomorrow is the public hearing for tunneling under Beverly Hills. Poison gas and Jewish children don't mix.
That's it. Turn them off. We have nothing else before us. We are adjourned.